many genres. It was an amazing group. One of my favorite groups of all time. Y'all give it up for Mr. Robert Cool Bell. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, how you doing?
We got the claps going for you. That's animated claps. We got the claps going for you. That was a round of applause. We got that.
I thought it was static. I said, wait a minute.
Right. You're fine. You're great. Well, how are you doing tonight, sir? I just want to thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm here in, I call it O-Town, but it's Orlando, Florida. And, you know, I've been here doing different promotions, et cetera, et cetera. But it's good to hear you guys, and thanks for having me.
No problem at all. I was going to get right to it because I don't want to take up too much of your time. But I wanted to get... It is so much with y'all, with the journey of Kool and the Gang. I just want to go back to you just as a musician, your childhood growing up. What was it that pulled you to music, that inspired you to be a musician?
Well, we started back in 1964. And the first name that we had was the Jazzy Acts. And then it was the Soul Town Band. And then it was Kool and the Flames. And we had to change Flame, because you had James Brown in the Famous Flame. And he didn't want to have any problems with the Godfather. So the music that we had developed was a mixture of jazz, R&B. And R&B came from the Soul Town Band, because there was an organization in Jersey City called the Soul Town Review. And they were trying to be like the Motown Review. And they had about 10 artists on the review. And we had to back up these artists. So needless to say, we had to learn a lot of Motown songs. And so what was happening was our music, the jazz side, and the R&B side, learning the Motown songs, and then listening to James Brown, and create our earlier sound when we came out with our first record in 1969. It was called Kool and the Gang, by Kool and the Gang, and the group was Kool and the Gang. So this year, we're celebrating 50 years, because that record came out in 1969. And now we're talking about 2019, so that's a 50-year celebration.
Right. Exactly. What was your influences growing up as a child? What was the music that was going on in your household?
Well, my grandmother played a little piano, and my uncle was into jazz. My father was a top five featherweight boxer. He used to box in Cuba and a lot of other places, and people like Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie, a lot of those guys used to come to Cuba. My father used to fight the Cuban fighters. So there was that kind of influence going on at the time. And we left from Youngstown, Ohio, but the band started in Jersey City. So we left Ohio in 1960. And that's when I met the guys. Later became, in 1964, the Jazzy Acts, as I said, Soul Town Band, Kool and the Flames, and then Kool and the Gang. Now, I was told from my grandmother and my family that my grandfather used to have me under the car with him. He was a mechanic. And they thought I was going to see a mechanic, you know. And I'm talking about from 1 to 9, because I left in 1960, I was 10 years old when I came to New Jersey. But before that, I built my own motorbike. I took a lawnmower motor and put it on a bicycle frame and created a motorbike. It didn't quite work out the brakes. I cut the clutch off when I got closer to the corner. But if something ran in front of me right immediately, I would have been in trouble. So anyway, you know, that didn't last. And now, had that happened, it would be a cooling game today.
Right.
So that's the story.
Right. And so, what was the music that your or what was the, I guess in the 50s and 60s, was it, what exactly was the musical influence that created the y'all spark to be musicians, you and your brother Ronald Bill?
Yeah, it was Motown. It was the Motown music, Motown. James Brown, but then you're talking about Miles Davis, Cindy Hubbard, John Coltrane, you know, all your top jazz artists, the Jazz Crusaders. That was what we were listening to.
Nice. And before I get to Cooling Gang, because I know everybody's listening and wants me to get to that part, I'm just trying to get the build-up going on with the how y'all started. But what was, in terms of you meeting all the members of Cooling the Gang, were you and your brother playing a lot together before y'all started integrating a band or putting together
a
band?
Well, we met them, who were still the original members back in Jersey City. That was George Brown, D.T. Thomas, Dennis Thomas, Robert Spiknik, and Joe. Those were some of the earlier members. And then later we met Charles Smith and Ricky West. And that we met them when we became more of the Soul Town band, when we started backing up the local talent for the Soul Town review. But it was a jazz influence in the beginning. Now, mind you, we were young guys talking about jazz influence, 13 and 14 years old.
Right. And yeah. Were you, what the process of those members that you met, like you mentioned, George Brown and the rest of them, when did you meet those, I guess the first members of Cool in the Gang, when did that start? Because I know you said y'all had multiple names for the group, but that was to the point to where y'all were backing or getting gigs. When did that group take place?
Well, the final name was changed in 1968, and we came out with our very first record in 1969. Now, at that time, we were called Cool and the Flames. And at that time, you had James Brown and the Famous Flames. So we didn't have any problem with the Godfather back in that time, with James Brown and the Famous Flames. So we thought of different names to call ourselves. So we said, well, we'll just call it Cool and the Gang. The music that we had, it was a combination of jazz, R&B, and funk. And that's how we became Cool and the Gang. And we came out with our first record in 1969, which was called Cool and the Gang. The album was called Cool and the Gang. And we were introduced to the world as Cool and the Gang.
Right. That was the self-titled album. And for me, that was, I mean, I wasn't even born when the concept of your group started. But just, I'm a musician, I play multiple instruments, and when I would focus on certain instruments, I was always, the samples, I'm going to get to that later in my questions, because y'all, you know, most notable group for the most samples of all in hip-hop and R&B of the late 80s, early 80s, going into the 80s, 90s, and to this day, you know, still, you know, a lot of samples being used. But I was going to get to the first self-titled album in terms of how the group came together. Was the creative process in terms of the music you were creating, was that, did y'all keep the same energy of that creative process when y'all started? Was it the same before you started recording an album? Was it the same process?
Well, yeah, it was the same process, but like I said, it was a combination of that mixture of jazz, funk, and R&B. Our very first album, if you listen to it, Cool the Gang was the very first single. And when that record came out, people thought it was a Spanish movement, because we didn't have any singers. It was more, you know, bongos and this and that. And then on that album, we had Sea of Tranquility. We had Since I Lost My Baby. We covered the song by the yes. Temptations.
Temptations, yes.
We have Raw Hamburgers.
Yes,
you do. Yeah.
And Sea of Tranquility, that's the one that sticks out the most. I mean, that's the one where I was really introduced, because listening to the music as a musician, and my ears turned different. And so, like I said, the sampling culture of that hip-hop integrated in modern R&B during the mid-90s and late 90s, and one in particular, artist D'Angelo, when he did the Untitled Blue
Album. He did his thing on Sea of Tranquility.
Right, and it was me, it's sort of that chain, I call it the musical connection of the musical dot connection. I followed the music that was of my time, that when I was a kid listening to, that artist made me sample and had me go back to listen to those records. And so when I was taking it, I was like, Sea of Tranquility, I'm like, that's that D'Angelo Send It On. I'm like, it's like the same process. And I was going to get back to one of the questions I had with the creativity of creating your self-titled album, the first one. What was it that create, because like you said, it's all live instrumentation. What was the practices like creating those arrangements? Because it's so, I don't know if we have a broad audience of music heads, music lovers that get deep with it as well. So I want to know, what was the practices like creating those arrangements? Like, how was those arrangements created, since it was just instrumentation?
Well, it came about because what we were doing. You know, we were listening to jazz, and we were, you know, from the Freddie Hubbards and the Jazz Crusaders and those groups at that time. And we just developed from what we were doing to these songs that we created, like Sea of Tranquility, Breathing Soul. It was just all a part of our evolution of music. We were just growing. I mean, you gotta realize, we're only 14, 15 years old. And we started growing musically. It was all about the music. God blessed us to have that insight to come up with those various tracks. And that's how it happened. And one thing I can say to you is a blessing to be able to come up with that type of music at such a young age.
Wow, and just listening to the first two albums, just to harp on it a little bit, even getting into the bass lines, I could throw out, like, music is the message, like, your bass line on that, it's like a constant groove, and then as well with, I could name some more, like, Rated from the Good Times, I guess, album Northeast, Southwest, the bass line on that is crazy, and just, it's like the most memorable. Rated X, and I remember John W. Coltrane, your bass line's on that. I wanted to know, I didn't hear so much of it in the first album, but the second and third, going into Wild and Peaceful and that one. What was your role as a band member? What was the role that you played? And was that intentional for you to make more bass-driven songs going to the second and third albums of Kool & the Gang?
Well, like I said, it was the evolution of what we did in terms of my bass parts and George Brown, the drummer, and my brother Khalees dealing with the horn lines. And, you know, we were just listening and growing and developing the Kool & Gang sound. I mean, leading up to, we did Funky Man, Funky Granny, Good Times on My Mind, all that other stuff that we were doing. And we were just doing it. I mean, we were like, this is what we did, this is what we felt, and this is what we recorded. And
so,
that was the part of the recording.
Was it like any, like, particular, like, if your brother had a certain arrangement, like, y'all just ripped off of what one bandmate did and it just created from that?
Yeah, well, my brother came up with a lot of the horn lines.
Uh-huh.
And also Spike Mickens, the late Mike Mickens and my brother, and Dennis Thomas. You know, that was the voices of Kool & Yang, was our horn section.
Yes, that's what I said distinguished, because when you look at funk music from that time or just anything that was related to soul music, y'all are distinguishable as a group because that was the highlight. Y'all were known for that horn section of anything. And I feel everything accommodated the horn section, not like other, that's why I could, it takes a certain ear to be able to sort of get individualism in each group, because like Earth, Wind & Fire and Ohio Players, like groups like Sly and the Family Stone, that's another one that I think of as well. That if any comparisons, what kind of, did y'all get any of those comparisons with certain groups, or was,
well,
did you feel like y'all stood alone as a band?
No. We were influenced by Sly. Because Sly came around late 68 to 69. And the thing that Sly was doing, yes, I would have to say that we were influenced by Sly and the Family Stone. And also James Brown. I mean, with those, you played a lot of James Brown groups, you know?
Yes, well, definitely in the first and second, mostly in the second album, I hear it a lot. But I wanted to know, it's such a music nerd question. I'm trying to, I hope people follow me listening in, but that riff you did, and I remember John W. Coltrane on that song, when it gets to that sax break, I just want to know, like, was it just all that, just y'all vibe? So you're telling me that y'all just vibe off of, in those studio sessions, creating those songs.
Yeah. Again, I remember John Coltrane. I definitely looked up to John Coltrane. And, Spike listened to Miles Davis, and Spike definitely loved Lee Morgan, you know? And I was listening to Ron Collier and Reggie Workman, and then Jameson, you know, when we started to have to play those songs behind the Motown groups, you know, Jameson had played some serious space play for a lot of those big Motown hits, you know?
Right.
So that was what was around this, and that was what, you know, helped to develop our sound during that time.
It's so hard. I feel like I have, like, top five of my favorite bass lines from the songs you own, but I feel like the one that I love the most, it's a tie between Ride the Rhythm and Wild and Peaceful, the self-titled song. It's like, and getting it to the Wild and Peaceful album, that's probably my top five album of all time. I sit and listen to that album constantly, but the Wild and Peaceful, I want to know, like, how long was that song before it got into mixing, or if when it was finally done, because it's like 9 minutes long, but how long originally was that song?
Well, I mean, that song we just stretched out. Well, it's like you said, 9 minutes. We did it. All the guys got a chance to do a solo, and it had that haunting vibe, you know, with the bass line and a different thing that we're doing. Ride the Rhythm was more of a, you know, on our funk groove. But Wild and Peaceful itself, the A side was Jungle Boogie, Hollywood Swingin', and Funky Stuff. And of course, the B side was the song Wild and Peaceful.
Yes.
Now, the A side came about because our record company at the time was saying, well, you guys need to come up with a hit. And they wanted us to do the work with the producer who had produced Mongo Da Mongo, Soul Makusa. We met with this guy one time, and we weren't feeling him. We said, well, listen, we went to the studio in a place called Baggies in the Village of New York. And we went in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we just grooved and grooved and grooved. We came up out of there. We had Funky Stuff, High Was Swinging, and Jungle Boogie. Needless to say, the record company didn't mess with us anymore. We had three major hits. Right. One side was the one side of Wild and Peaceful, and then we went on and did Wild and Peaceful, which was the B-side.
Wow. And the social climate then, like you said, y'all were influenced by Sly and the Family Stone, and I feel like going into that album, Wild and Peaceful, and then specifically Light of the World, that album, I noticed that it was, like, very apparent, like, that concept of that album was given the social climate. What was the social climate like for you in your eyes for you guys to create albums like Light of the World?
Well, Light of the World, I mean, Summer Madness came out of the Light of the World album. And that mm-hmm. became a major record. It was even in the Rocky movie, Summer Madness. And the song Light of the World, we're just dealing with life, you know. In the darkness of this world, please send us your light. Light of the World.
Right.
And there was so many things going on like it is today. Like we said, who's going to take the weight? And everything that's going on today with so much negativity around the world, Light of the World was like, you know, wake up, people. Songs like Higher Plane. We've been down too long. Getting down too slow. You got to lift up to a higher plane of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. We were sending messages out. Music is a message. We were sending out messages in our own kind of a way.
Right. And with that going into, I think, mid-70s, when y'all got to, I saw a quote from you in terms of that era where they were trying to get y'all to, conform to, the record label trying to get y'all to do more disco records that time period. I just paraphrase what you said. You said that they were trying to bend y'all style a little bit and how y'all created. What got y'all out of that period of that?
Well,
76 to 79, I guess.
Yeah, we had to compete what was going on. But disco was strong. You had your disco groups and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we came up with the song Sesame. We said, okay, we're going to put the four on the floor. But mm-hmm. the top is going to be who in the gang. And when you heard Open Sesame, my brother, Spike Mickens, the lines you heard on Open Sesame were jazz lines over a disco beat.
Oh, wow.
So that's how Open Sesame became about. And then Open Sesame became a part of the Saturday Night Fever movie.
Yeah.
And we won a Grammy with the Bee Gees.
Oh, wow. I was going to get to the hip-hop in a minute. In terms of the sampling, but my question on just on y'all as bandmates, were y'all in recording sessions, were y'all a one take group?
Well, for the most part, one take, two takes. You know, when we go into the studio and we had different creativities. But yeah, I mean the rhythm section, we laid down what we had to do, and then the horn section, you know, did what they had to do. So sometimes it was one take, two takes, sometimes I was three takes. And my brother constantly heard different things. Like Open Sesame.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
When you listen to Open Sesame, all them different lines, da 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 da
right.
Da da da. So many, you know, a lot of groups try to play that song. Bam, they didn't quite get it. I mean, I've heard different bands, and people have told me about different bands that try to play Open Sesame. They couldn't get that on.
It's very hard to trying to get the melody of Gift of Love, because I play the drums, and that pattern, that drum pattern, man, George Brown, I don't know how you did it, but that Gift of Love.
It was
that's what I'm saying, it's like y'all were way before your time, because everything that is in that song, they still try to replicate that, because they did it in the late 80s and 90s, and that gets into sampling, get more down the line. But the question was that whole era before y'all got, what was it that for you that, was it Celebrate that felt like y'all finally caught mainstream's attention, or was it a little bit before the Celebrate came, during that?
Well, we caught mainstream, after the whole disco, anti-disco movement.
Right.
And, we were out on a tour with, the Jacksons. At that time, Jackson 5. And the guy by the name of Dick Griffin, who also, started Solar Records.
Yes.
He came to us and he said, you guys are doing well on the tour. He said, but I think you need a lead singer. And we said, well, we thought about it. A lot of our music, we found out later because you said D'Angelo playing over, you know,
yes.
Jack Quilly, was, it had those musical tones and progressions. So, we thought about it. We said, well, Earthman and Fire had Philip Bailey and Maurice White. The Commodore is the lead singer for, Lionel Richie was the lead singer for the Commodores.
Right.
So we said, hey, maybe it's a time for change. And we auditioned only one person, James J.T. Taylor. Now, my wife and I was hanging out in New York at the time, of Studio 54 at Regine's, and we realized that every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday was ladies' night. So I came back to the group and said, man, I got a great idea for the first song for our new lead singer, James J.T. Taylor. They said, what? I said, I got two concepts, hanging out, but that's what I was doing in New York, and ladies' night. And they said, wow, ladies' night, back to work. And that's when we got ladies' night, and the rest is history. Frankie Crocker in New York, he broke that record, and then we ended up getting two American Music Awards out in L.A., and then we were celebrating the fact that we were able to turn our career around with a new lead singer. And then my brother came up with an idea called Celebration.
Yes.
And 30 years later, Celebration is one of our strongest songs.
Yes, it's everywhere. I mean, in terms of y'all's commercial success, I feel like still to this day, I think it was like a commercial. It was like, I hear it in commercials sometimes and then everywhere. You can't get away from that song. It's big. I want to know, what's your favorite song during that? Or do you have, I don't know if it's a blasphemous statement to ask if you have a favorite song in the Celebrate era or not.
It's hard. It's hard
right.
to pick a favorite song.
I mean, is it any bass riff? Or let me be specific.
Hollywood
Swinging. Oh, go ahead.
I like Jungle Boogie.
Right.
I like Get Down On It. Of course, I like Ladies Night, and I came up with the title. And, of course, I like Celebration. So, and Summer Madness, you know. So, it's
right.
kind of hard. And we have so many, and I'm listening to you, and you definitely know a lot about who in the gang. You're talking about Rhyme Time People and Chocolate Buttermilk. And I remember John Coltrane and
Peter
Tranquilly and Breezing Soul. You know,
yes.
A lot of fans don't know that. They don't know that history. They know the hits.
Right. Yeah, it's just being a student. I call it being a student of the craft of music and trying to evolve in that way. But I guess I should ask, what's your favorite bass riff you created from any albums that you have any favorites that you've done or that you like playing?
I would say Funky Stuff.
Oh, that's the one.
Yeah, because Funky Stuff
is legendary.
That was one of those bass lines that captured a lot of years. You know, I can't get enough of that Funky Stuff. Then there was others. I like the bass line on Summer Madness. And there's others. But I would say, Funky Stuff.
I feel like Good Times, I feel like that was your, I mean, if any bass line, not to say that's like your best, but I mean, in terms of the evolution of hearing Kool & the Gang records with that album, Good Times, like, I felt like that was that, and it's a tie between, for me, it's a tie between that and, you know, Wild and Peaceful, the A and B side.
Yeah, Wild and Peaceful is great, too. But the guitar part.
Yes, that, yeah. Yes.
Prince did, show, and he said he was influenced by our guitarist, Charles Smith, funky stuff. Because the type of rhythm that Charles had, it sounded like two guitar players playing, but it wasn't.
Yeah, that, exactly. One. Yeah, right.
Right.
That's exactly
so,
right. Yeah.
That's another one. I mean, going back.
Yeah, it sounded like I was just having fun in the, like, it felt like a long jam session. But the
That's
arrangement,
what it was.
The horn section arrangement, like, created this, like, arrangement, how steady it with the melodies were. It's like, in one thought process, you're like, okay, they rehearsed this, this is arranged, but this feels like a natural, like, progression throughout the song, like, y'all just jamming. That's what all the songs feel like.
That's what it was. That's what the funky stuff became. You might be hearing the train outside here because I stepped outside for this interview. But yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
And so how did Kool & the Gang, how did y'all, since we're getting into late 80s, early 90s, how did Kool & the Gang embrace hip-hop in its early stages? Because they sampled y'all. Crazy,
but that's serious. Yeah, hip hop. Yeah, they started. I think because of what we did in the earlier days, and we didn't really have singers, and the hip hop artists started listening to the different bass lines and the drum beats, and they started creating, you know, what they created.
Like a lot of breakbeats from the first album was like a lot of samples. I hear most of the breakbeats from the hip hop, they get it from y'all Kool & the Gang self-titled first album. There's a lot of samples.
Some of the beats and you know, we had a song one time called NT, and it came up to be NT because we didn't have a title. So we said, "What are we gonna call this song?" We said, "Well, we don't have a title for it, so let's call it NT." And a lot of, that drum beat for NT, different rappers has used that, beat, NT, from NT.
Yes. And I don't know, but some say Summer Madness as well, cause I know, like, particularly Fresh Prince, or I say Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff, Summertime, that was, you know what I mean, in that one, and then also Jungle Jazz.
Was
sampled from Jay Don't Walk Away, and that was a 90s R&B. That was a big hit.
Definitely.
And then there's so many, like I said, like it's like almost 30 years of samples. Like if you count the late 80s going into the 90s, early 2000s, mid 2000s, late 2010s even, you know, like 7 to 8 years ago, it's sampled crazy.
Yeah, he definitely took Summer Madness, and created Summertime, which is a big record. He didn't change it up that much. That he just took the track,
right.
And he did a Summertime rap on top of it, which was a big record for him. After that, he went on.
Yeah.
That record became number one, and that record became number one, and that record also won a Grammy. And then from there, he went into the movie business.
Right. And real quick, before I let my co-host Whitney, I think she has a couple questions for you. I think. The Jungle Jazz, what's the difference between Jungle Jazz and Jungle Boogie?
Well, it was jazzy, if you listen to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you look at
I didn't know if it was, just like with the jazz album, y'all created after, what was it? Was it before Wild and Peaceful that from y'all did jazz or songs from the first album? Am I correct?
Well, the Jungle Jazz, like I said, was we took Jungle Boogie and we jazzed it up. We had a flute solo in there, and we had different solos on Jungle Jazz. And like I said, it was an extension of Jungle Boogie.
Right, because the intro, because if that song Jade Don't Walk Away,
they used the drum part.
Well, it sounds like the percussion, like you said, and they just took that one part of the intro of Jungle Jazz, and that was the whole song throughout the entirety was that, and I was like, and then it was just me tracking it back. It was, because most of this I haven't Googled. I know all this from not Google or Wikipedia. It was just me learning it for myself, because it's probably way more songs that are popular to the listening audience of theirs. But I'm going to throw it to my co-host, Whitney, and I believe she has some questions for you.
Okay.
I had a few just about some of your other ventures that you've gotten into over the years. So starting with, like, the humanitarian efforts, REACH in particular, could you tell us about your involvement with that and just kind of tell us about, you know, what it's all about?
Well, REACH came out of Chicago, and it was dealing with the University of Chicago, dealing with solar energy. And I became a part of the whole REACH solar energy project, because I've been in and out of Africa many times. And our whole thing was developing solar energy in Africa, and then I partnered with Dusty Baker. He was the coach for the Washington Nationals. So that's where the whole REACH project came from. And we will be doing projects in Africa this year and next year under the REACH banner.
Nice, nice. And I had seen that you are the music ambassador to the Ivory Coast of Africa. So is that kind of how that came about, just you doing different humanitarian efforts over there, or is that something, like, completely different?
Well, REACH is a little different, but Ivory Coast, I've been going in and out of Ivory Coast for almost 20 years. The late president, Houphouet Boigny, gave us an opportunity in the Ivory Coast to deal with real estate development and to deal with music and entertainment in the Ivory Coast. And that's how I got involved in the Ivory Coast. It was from the late President Houphouet Boigny. And we're still doing things in the Ivory Coast. I have my niece, her name was Fati. I have Angela Gitt. Her video, her single to you guys, and it's called Love, and it's coming from the actress from Liberia and the Ivory Coast.
Nice, that's awesome. It's awesome. And I also see that you had LaCool Champagne, is that correct, that recently came out this past Thanksgiving? Can you tell us about that and where... Tell your plans and things around it.
Well, the LaCool Champagne is a deal that I did up in Rems, which is you know, Champagne country, where they have Moët Chandon, Dom Perignon, Cristal, Dom Bernard, Bourgogne Sauvignon. And so that's something I had wanted to for over a year, and then finally when I was over there, I cut a deal with a family called the Bertolo family, because, you know, the Champagne's up there is controlled by the families, and we were able to cut a deal with the Bertolo family, and the Champagne right now is in France, and right now we're talking to distributors here in America and distributors in Africa and other parts of the world for the LaCool Champagne.
Nice. So do you have, or if you're able to tell us, do you have any idea when it may make its way over to the U.S., or is that kind of something that's still being worked out?
We're talking to different distributors. Well, I would say by the spring,
Nice.
Be ready to rock and roll. Yeah.
That's good. That's something to look forward to. And so I also seen that you have, like, lots of different business ventures going on. Can you speak about Just Cool Enterprises and any other ventures that you may have going on, and just kind of tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, I have a company called Just Cool Enterprises. And Just Cool Enterprises came about from my wife, who wanted to do things outside of Cool and the Gang to diversify in other areas. And I lost my wife about 2 months ago. And all her projects I'm doing, you know, Just Cool Enterprises, Cool Kids Foundation. I'm doing, she has a project called Green Stars. Of course, the solar energy with Justin Becker. We're doing something with a hand sanitizer called Durasan, and we're doing something with organic fertilizer that doubles the yield. It has no pesticide in it, and we're going to kick that off in Africa as well.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And again, sorry to hear about your wife. And I think that's just a beautiful way to still recognize her and all her efforts to keep all of that going on. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Okay.
And then lastly, just again, kind of reflecting over, like, the last 50 years, the different humanitarian efforts, the different business ventures, just everything that has transpired over time, and looking at your different accomplishments, what would you say would be some, like, keys not only to success but staying, like, relevant and just, I guess, just keeping everything going? Like, what do you have any tips that you could share with us?
Well, again, you know, first of all, you know, I thank all my fans who have supported Cool and the Gang over 50 years with our ups and downs. And, you know, a lot of our accomplishments and things that, you know, we want to continue to do. One highlight is a show that we did in Kenya, and it was for AIDS awareness. And it was called No Glove, No Love. And we drew over 500,000 people in front of the Ministry of Health. We're telling the young kids there, you know, we can't tell you what to do with your lives sexually, but you need to protect yourself. So that was a whole concept of no glove, no love. And like I said, we drew over 500,000 people.
Right, right. No, I mean, that's important. Like, that's a good one to push. And that's all I had. Just wanted to, ask some of those questions to kind of show the full picture of who you are. Cause of course we all know you for your music, but wanted to also make sure that we pointed out some of the other, efforts and things that you have going on. So I'll pass it back over to you, Q-Lynn. Thank you.
Okay. I just have two last questions to wrap this up, cause I don't want to take too much of your time. But the one I have is in terms of your progression. I know you said earlier on y'all were evolving, y'all were young musicians, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds. What was it that something that you focused on in terms of your live shows and engaging the audience? What was it that you learned? What insight do you have for when you were younger, how you played and how y'all perform now in front of packed audiences?
Well, when we were younger, our whole thing was to try to put together a good show. When my first record came out back in 1969, we went to the Apollo Theater. And it was this group called Willie Feaster and the Mighty Magnificent and Skip Sonny and the Pace Brothers. And they had their act together. They blew us out. We ran back to Jersey City. We just coming out of jazz. So we realized that this is what we have to do. We have to put a show together because we're more jazz musicians, backup musicians from the Soul Town Band and the Jazzy Act. So we had to come back and put together a show that can compete with those guys. And a year later, we finally got him back. You know, it's a cheetah. I don't know if you guys know. It's a place in New York called the Cheetah. And we blew them off the stage. So it took us a year to get our act together. So I ask you a question. We understood, I should say, that it's all about a show, not just standing up and playing. We had to put a show together that would be effective. And we finally did that. So that was one of the things, yeah.
We're at the end of the show now, and I was just want to let you know I appreciate you coming on, and I have such respect. I've actually been to one of your live shows in the past 3-4 years, and it's amazing. In particular, your guitarist, Rick Marcel, I'm a big fan of his. I follow him. I think he played with the
Yeah, Island. Yeah, Rick's been hanging out with us.
Amazing. And Ronald Bill, Rick, and also shout out to Ronald Bill, George Brown, Dennis Thomas, I believe. I know I'm forgetting a lot of people, but it's an amazing band. Mm-hmm. You contributed amazing to the Lakers. Do you feel as though Kool and the Gang have, because you received accolades from Soul Train Awards and others, do you feel as though because I feel like your implement is there, because it still remained in terms of your influence, but what do you see in futuristically, do you feel like the artists now are carrying on the tradition of passing down musical history like a band like yourself, Kool and the Gang?
Well, I mean, those who are there, and hopefully they'll continue to move on. You got people like Bruno Mars, who was influenced by Kool and the Gang, Charlie Wilson,
right,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And you have other groups. I like Mint Condition and what they were doing, et cetera. And, I'm talking about 50 years. Hopefully they'll be able to do the same thing, 50 years from now. I mean, who knows? But that's what it's about.
Kool and the Gang, one of my favorite bands. I believe everybody knows it's such implemented in music history. I just want to thank you for coming on the show. Robert Coolville, he went with him. They're part of a legendary group, Kool and the Gang, 7-time Grammy Award winners, all the accolades, multi-platinum, 80 million albums sold worldwide. Robert Bill, the United States Ambassador of Music, in the arts in many countries. So I just want to thank you for coming on the show and gracing us with your time.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, then.
Y'all give it up for Mr. Robert Coolville. We had a legend on the show. I feel like those that are listening in, I need y'all to recognize, like, we're in the month of a legend. Like, this isn't, you know what I mean? We're talking about 30-plus years of passed down from samples from hip hop, and you know what I mean? I can keep going on. R&B, 90s, most of your favorite 90s R&B and hip hop has sampled Kool and the Gang. But
okay, then.
Yes, but thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And so just listening in, this Soul Savage Radio Show, we'll be back every Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we're going out with a hit song from number one smash, Kool and the Gang.
What you gonna do?
Okay.
You wanna
all right,
get out? Tell me. What you gonna do?
Yeah.
Do you wanna get out? What you gonna do? You wanna get out? What you gonna do? You wanna get out? Tell me. By standing on the wall,
get your back up off the wall.
Tell me, how you gonna do it if you really don't wanna dance? By standing on the wall,
get your back up off the wall.
Well, I heard all the people saying,
get down on it,
come on in. If you really want it,
get down on it.
You gotta feel it. What you gonna do? You gotta by standing on the wall.
Get your back up off the wall.
Tell me, how you gonna do it if you really won't take a chance by standing on the wall?
Get your back up off the wall.
Cause I heard all the people saying,
get down on it.
Get down on it
while
you're dancing.